American Auto!
This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about Mike.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Where's the buff dudes at?
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Yeah, we debated some of this yesterday. Where will Geno Smith end up in terms of the salary range? And Brady Henderson joined us. I'll play some of the sound here. He says yesterday that there might be some 14 teams that could be in need of a quarterback. And as you're starting to think about who's going to fill all of those spots, even if it's not all the way to 14, there's only so many players available in the draft that are likely to be able to step in right away. There's a couple of free agents that have some clout to them. And one of those bigger names, Tom Brady, decided this morning that he's out. He's going to retire. He's not coming back. So whether that was San Francisco or Vegas or New England or, you know, anywhere else, that's no longer an option. Aaron Rodgers might be traded, but does that then open something up in Green Bay? Are they going to stick with Love? I mean, there's a lot still to be determined. Yep. But when you look at that market and how many openings there are and what Geno accomplished last year, don't you have to wonder if there's somebody out there who wants to bid up his services?
Yes. Can we do this? I mean, we can do this within 30 seconds, right? We can go through 32 teams really quickly and say, do they need a quarterback or not? Buffalo, no. Miami, no. New England, likely not. New York Jets, yes. Cincinnati, no. Baltimore's going to put the exclusive on Lamar. Pittsburgh, no. Cleveland, no. Jacksonville, no. Tennessee,
yes. Like
Tannehill is under contract for another year.
I would say yes.
But you could say yes. Indianapolis?
Yes.
Yes. Houston? Yes.
Wait, I've got a little help for you here for the next yes.
What? Oh, okay. Kansas City? No. Chargers? No. Vegas?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, very good. Denver? No. Philadelphia? No.
You Dallas, sure about Denver?
Dallas? No, I'm sure.
You sure about Dallas?
$165 million.
You sure about Dallas?
I'm sure about Dallas.
You sure about Dallas?
New York Giants?
Yes.
Washington Commanders? Yes. Minnesota? No. Detroit? Yeah. No.
Minnesota?
You sure about Minnesota? But you can't say you're 100% sure about all these guys. None of these teams are going to make a move?
I think it's very reactionary when, like, the offseason comes or the first week of it. Like, and then you realize Dak Prescott, you know, got you to the playoffs. And Kirk Cousins won how many games last year? And, yeah, so okay. And I think those guys are under contract. So Green Bay was a yes. Chicago, Justin Fields.
No, I would say no.
Okay. Tampa Bay is a yes. I think the whole NFC South. Tampa Bay, Carolina, New Orleans, Atlanta, all four of those.
That's 12.
San Francisco?
13.
Seattle?
14.
Rams and Cardinals.
Okay.
So there you go.
There's 14, which is exactly the number Brady told us yesterday when he joined us. I'm glad we went through that exercise. We could have just played Brady.
I know there's a lot of teams that could need quarterbacks. I just glanced at the standings and did sort of an unofficial count. There, I counted kind of maybe 14 teams that could need quarterbacks this offseason. But a lot of other veteran guys who are going to be available, and it's a decent draft for quarterbacks. And I'm just not sure that another team is going to be willing to go $30+ million. Maybe there is, but I wonder if sort of the ceiling for him is closer to $30 million.
Even if it's 30 million, if you're the Seahawks, do you want to get in bed with a $30 million contract for a quarterback? It's hard for me to imagine. Okay, fine. Maybe it's not going to be $35 million. I don't think your issue with Geno is over $5 million. If you're willing to pay him 30, I think you're willing to pay him 35. Mm-hmm. To me, the issue with Geno is, are you willing to pay him big money at all? Or do you say, if I don't have one of the absolute studs in the NFL, the Patrick Mahomes, the Josh Allens, the Joe Burrows, I'm out. It's not worth it. And I want to go do something else. That part is really hard for me to fathom. Like, I don't want to be in the middle.
Did it matter what they did 10 years ago? I saw some of this conversation in the social media realm. And is it Michael Duggar Smith from The Athletic?
Sean Duggar.
Sorry. Yeah, yep. There you go.
That was close.
That was close.
Almost had that.
Yeah, not actually close at all. and he tweeted yesterday, and there was quite a bit of response to it. Like, hey, yeah, I think we're kind of misremembering how they did this the first time. And everybody just thinking, oh, you find all this other talent, and then the quarterback comes. But was there something to learn from that last time? Because that last time, it, you know, it was Matt Flynn, mm-hmm. but it wasn't $30
million. No.
And it was Matt Flynn at that point, and they ate, I don't know, 10 or 12 million bucks or whatever it was. It was still a bite, but it was not this.
It wasn't all in.
New.
And in fact, the only time they went all in was for Russ, which they seem to have regretted.
But did they? I mean, they went all in the acquisition phase. Third round's not all in on him.
No, but then they paid him all in. I mean, they made him the highest paid guy in the league and
multiple times.
Right around there. So, and that seems to be what they are objecting to from their own past.
Yep.
So are you willing to pay Geno Smith? If you're willing to pay him 30, by all means, pay him 35.
Correct.
The question is, are you willing to pay him more than 15? And I understand if I'm Geno Smith, I'm worth a lot more than that. I don't want to make $15 million a year when 14 teams need a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I can go to free agency, but I don't buy this from Brady at all.
Somewhere around 80 to 85% that I think it will get done. Now, I don't think it will get done, and I'm not confident in this projection, but if I had to guess, I would say that it doesn't get done before free agency because I'm not convinced that the Seahawks are going to use the franchise tag on him.
I love Brady, as you know, but I strongly disagree with this logic here. Mm. If there's an 85% chance that he's back, I don't see any way it happens after he goes to free agency. If he goes to free agency, he's signing somewhere for $30-plus million. That's it. He's a first-wave guy. He was the number five free agent, according to ESPN.com, on the board this offseason. The number five guy doesn't like hang around for a while and then go back to the team he was with. The number five guy signs day one, minute one of free agency, and that's it. So if it's going to get done, I think it gets done soon. And if he goes to free agency, I think he's out. I think he says, see you later. And that's why I don't buy 85%, 75%. I'm under 50%. I don't think it's as likely that he returns as that he leaves.
History's also told us they don't use the franchise tag.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just not been other than for Orlando Mare.
And Frank Clark,
who they ended up doing a deal with, yeah. Right?
No, so, they traded him.
That's what I'm saying. They ended up trading in a deal. Sorry, that was the wrong verbiage. They ended up trading him. Could that be a possibility? History has told you that they did it with him. And is that the route that you want to go to kind of feel out how all of this free agency works as well?
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that that's a little like you can move things around a little bit, right? Like, so yeah, he's number five on this list, but Derek Carr's not on that list. Aaron Rodgers isn't on that list. Bunch of these quarterbacks, Daniel Jones isn't on that list, right? I mean, there's a bunch of guys there not on the list because QBs in that market's different. Right. And how that all gets sorted out and what that looks like in the different trades and the things and the surprises we have seen. Huge surprises at that position. Tom Brady leaves New England. Russell Wilson leaves Seattle. Deshaun Watson gets paid $250 million guaranteed dollars. Right. I mean, craziness happens at that position. I don't know. I'm leaning. I'm with you in that 85% and going to free agency. Those don't mix for me. Right. But I am more of the mind that if a deal is going to get done, it's going to get done with him tasting the market and seeing what is available to him.
But he can't taste the market officially without going to free agency. So if he goes to free agency and you think that if he does, he's out, he can't taste the market.
Kind of. I mean, we have a combine that kind of gives us a little
His
taste.
His agent can get a little
kinda
sense.
Kind of like the old Mitch Haniger, you know, when it came to this exclusive tag and what are we going to do here, you kind of had a
sense. Okay, but that still gets done then before the franchise tag in 3 weeks. I mean, I think we're going to find out about Geno in the near future.
When was the franchise tag more? Was that March 5th, the week before with the deadline?
It might have been the 7th.
Yeah,
are they allowed to sign? They can sign their own free agents still, though, right?
Yeah.
So, we could wake up tomorrow and we could find out that they've signed Drew Lock to a 2-year, $20 million deal.
Uh-huh.
I mean, would that change things? I think it would change things dramatically. And if I'm the Seahawks, I'm thinking more and more seriously about doing that. And with the money I can save and looking at the other guys in the top five of free agency, two of which are defensive interior linemen, given the paucity, Brock, of those guys. I know you wanted a big word today.
Good
There's
job.
One. 30%. 30% for me on Geno.
Continues to trickle down.
I know, and I'm almost saying 25. Like it just feels really challenging
we'll
for me to imagine it's going to happen.
Yeah, next week we'll be at 25.
Yeah, something about being in the middle doesn't quite work for me. Mm-hmm. If you got a guy worth $50 million, pay him. If you've got a guy at $10 million, build around him. But at $30 million in between, It just doesn't feel quite right. We've got some breaking sports news here out of Seattle as a big time star is on their way out. We'll tell you who that is next.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, I did promise some breaking news, and I'm sorry, it's not good news for Storm fans. Brianna Stewart on her way out, Brock. She is heading to New York to join the Liberty, according to Ramona Shelburne. A lot of it has to do with the travel schedule, which is not a huge surprise, right? Huge difference playing here in the Pacific Northwest, as we've seen talked about when it comes to free agents, especially in baseball. And hockey, it could be a little less of an issue because of some of the Canadian teams that are close by, but it's amazing how often that gets cited as a problem.
Chance to go back home or closer to home. Obviously, grew up in the Northeast, played at UConn, an amazing player. I mean, one that my Macy loves watching basketball. She loves to play the game, and she watches so much women, especially women's college basketball this time of year. But you watch Brianna Stewart play, and she is, holy smokes, is she good. Yeah. I mean, we have been.
Who's Macy's favorite player?
Oh, I don't know if she has necessarily a favorite player. Yeah, she just...
Who modeled her game after?
Well, the gal at Iowa now, Clark, is unbelievable. I mean, she can shoot like Steph Curry and Caitlin Clark. She's probably the one that Macy would say. Yeah, she is must-see TV. Brianna was that way. Sue Bird was that way. Lauren Jackson was that way. We have been pretty darn spoiled with some of the best women's basketball players in the history of the sport in our market. And a bummer that one of them is leaving in New York.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, speaking of leaving and speaking of some of the greatest of all time, the greatest football player of all time is leaving the sport again.
Good morning, guys. I'll get to the point right away. I'm retiring for good. I know the process was a pretty big deal last time, so when I woke up this morning, I figured I'd just press record and let you guys know first. So,
do you think that's true? Do you think he just woke up in the morning and was like, yeah, let's just do it right now? Or do you think that maybe it was a little bit more coordinated than that?
I don't.
I won't be long-winded. You only get one super emotional retirement essay, and I used mine up last year. So really thank you guys so much to every single one of you for supporting me. My family, my friends, my teammates, my competitors. I could go on forever. There's too many. Thank you guys for allowing me to live my absolute dream. I wouldn't change a thing. Love you all.
I mean, the numbers are staggering. Mm-hmm. I have said this now multiple times. We will never see another Tom Brady. I won't in my lifetime, at least. 22 years, 7 Super Bowls, 15 Pro Bowls, 3-time MVP. Those numbers are crazy. But I think what is even more remarkable in this day and age, in this era, in this social media era, in this day of everything is transparent, right? You're not brushing anything under the rug. Everything is out there. That in 22 years, have you heard a teammate ever say a bad thing about Tom Brady? I mean, competitors like Brandon Stokely on our show at 7:30 this morning saying, I hated Brady. I hated the Patriots. I hated them. And you hated them because they won 6 Super Bowls.
No.
But have you ever heard a teammate?
No. But I can count on one finger the number of quarterbacks I've ever heard teammates say anything bad about.
Oh, there were teammates with Peyton Manning. He had a kicker that blasted him publicly.
Two fingers.
And Russell Wilson. And
right. Name a third.
I think, actually, if you gave me a little bit of time, you would go down that list.
It'd be very rare, man. It would be very rare.
I don't know. Derek Carr. I think there's more than...
I mean, but good players, right? I don't think there are that many good quarterbacks that you would be able to say that about. The point's still well taken. As great as Tom Brady was, he was a fantastic teammate. He had the respect of everybody around him. And as Moore pointed out earlier, he had 3 different careers in his 20s, 30s, and 40s that were all Hall of Fame worthy by themselves. Spectacular.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, we'll be talking a little bit more about this coming up, but the Mariners over the next couple of days are sort of doing their pre-spring training promotion, which is exciting. It means we're only a few weeks away from seeing this team actually come together down in Peoria and start working towards the future, which is going to be great. Scott Servais on yesterday with Wyman and Bob told a fun little story about being in the middle of the pile, well, really the bottom of the pile as they battled against the Angels last year.
I came out of that pile. I'm down underneath that pile. And I've been in a few piles as a player, which is a little bit different. Now I'm the old guy. And they had Noah Syndergaard at the time was on their team. And I look up, and he's got the long blonde hair. Yeah. I'm like, this Noah Syndergaard's like 6'6", 260 pounds, and this guy's on top of me. I'm like, what am I got to get out of here quickly. I get out of that scrum. I got dirt everywhere. Now I get back up in the clubhouse, and Winker's sitting there, and somebody sends him a pizza. And he's now, guys, and it really, when you go through something like that as a team, it really galvanizes the team. Everybody's together. Everybody's like, okay, now we're going to take it to another level. And we really did.
Oh, I was always told that it doesn't do anything for a team, that it's a joke and it doesn't matter. And Mike, shut up about fighting, and it's not good for a team, and it's bad. If anything, it's worse for them rather than good. Oh, so it galvanizes them? Oh, so it brings them together? Oh, so it had something for them all to talk about and bond over? The defense rests.
Are you trying to be the anti-progressive commercial? That's kind of what you did right there. You're kind of young and scrappy and feisty right there.
Darn right.
Yeah, unlike last night. That's really well done.
I heard him say that yesterday. I got to admit. I was like, oh, really? Oh, so now everyone wants to come out and say it was a big deal? Yeah. No kidding. No. There you go. That's everything you need to know. I didn't ask Scott yesterday.
Are you okay today?
Why?
It's been kind of feisty.
Icy day for sure. I think it's Brock calling him out. I think Brock set him off early by making him question some if he's too old and if he's lost a step. Challenges you to use big words.
Can you just play the progressive commercial,
it's
please?
It's Heather's birthday today. I need you to be in a better headspace for this day.
You think I'm being feisty today?
She didn't mention a good time to call her back. How am I supposed to know when to call her back? No.
I don't feel like I'm any more feisty today than any other day. I feel like it's just me being me. I think that I'm feisty.
Give me one more. Give me one more progressive, please.
It's a constant battle. We're going to open a PDF. Who's next?
Those better than the Geico ants? Yes. You think that's better than the Geico ants?
Oh, the Geico ants was great.
Oh, yeah. Aunt Bonnie and Aunt Joni here.
One was amazing. Yeah. Expired. Yeah. Expired.
Aunt Joni's expired.
You see my friend request. I love that too.
I don't know. I think as much as I love Dr. Rick and think those commercials are great, it's really hard to beat the ants. They're a powerhouse of women who've shown up at those poor people's house to torture them for as long as they're going to be there. Yeah. I really like those ants. All right. Coming up next, more from Scott Service. I got actually a bunch of stuff here. We got a little heated playing one of his cuts earlier. We'll see if we can dig back into that conversation a whole lot more. It's Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710, salesports.com.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
It's interesting. As much as everyone is excited about this Mariners season, there are, I think, two things, and they are related, that tend to be the most polarizing portions of this Mariner, whether it's the roster or the offseason, et cetera. One is whether or not they did enough to improve their offense, which we've obviously talked about ad nauseum. And the Mariners are setting themselves up for a problem to be criticized if their offense struggles. And if it goes fine, then, a lot of people are going to owe Jerry and John Stand and some other folks an apology. The other, though, is Jared Kelnick. He is as polarizing still, I think, as anybody on this team in terms of an expectation for what you can expect moving forward. Sorry to drop the same word twice, but you get my point. Mm-hmm. When Jared Kelnick's name comes up, you get this complete polarity between folks who say, I'm done, and folks who say he's 22. Mm-hmm. And the talent is there. The head has not come around yet. Will it? Is it a youth and immaturity thing, or can he get this thing figured out? That's like the probably biggest question mark about this team heading into 2023.
Yeah, and some of that is on Jared. Mm-hmm. Some of that's taking the Mariners stuff off of Instagram and social media and playing all of that game for some reason. Some of it's just expectation and unmet expectation of a kid that's uber talented that smell you later, kind of brought some of that bro, had his own website, had his own marketing line, all that stuff, right? And it's been a rough ride. It's been an up and down and an up and down and sent to the minors a few different times. And then we talked about this a lot when we were doing the podcast last year leading into the season, And then when you got a young guy next to you that just is flourishing and a lot younger in a Julio Rodriguez.
1 year younger, yes.
Well, let's see. Jared's 23.
Jared's 23.
Yeah, he's 23.
He just turned 23.
In July.
Right.
He's 23 and a half. He'll be 24 in July. But as far as, hey, you know,
he's not a lot younger. He's a year younger.
He's a lot younger in experience.
He's a year younger than him.
Yeah. Anywho, a lot younger, and he comes on the scene in year one and doesn't have to go to the minors and then doesn't have to get sent down and doesn't have to get sent down. Sure. And even through his struggles in the first month and 2 months of the season where he's getting hosed by umpires, doesn't flinch and has unbelievable poise and then just takes over. And in some ways becomes the young superstar of the entire league, including at the Home Run Derby where he was the star of stars. So, yeah, I think unfairly for Jared, you're going to be compared to your peer. And you're going to be compared to the other young guy that's next to you that is shown like, hey, man, so you're supposed to be. This is what we were told you were going to be, right? You can one leg squat 450 pounds and you can hit a ball with exit velo that sounds unlike anything else. And then you have kind of a little bro mentality where it's like, yeah, man, smell you later. Mm. You know, like it just is unmet expectations.
There's no doubt about that part of it. I mean, he has not met expectations the same way Julio has. But I also think that when you talk to people in baseball, they will tell you there is no one path for prospects to grow into who they're going to be. And the fact that he may not turn into a superstar at Julio's level doesn't make him a bad player or a player that is worth giving up on. In fact, there's still a large amount of space between where Jared Kelnick is right now and where Julio Rodriguez is for him to eventually fall into. Mm-hmm. Scott Service on with Wyman and Bob yesterday said this.
You know, it's been rocky for Jared at times. I thought he made some really nice strides, and we brought him up right at the end of the season. I thought the quality of his at-bats improved a ton. Got some big hits. He hit some balls hard. Hopefully he builds on that throughout the offseason. I know he is. I don't know if there's anybody that works any harder than Jared Kelnick, but, you know, you got to work on the right things. And I think that's what we're starting to see a little bit shift there, is understanding where his deficiencies lie, whether it's he's got to be able to track and handle more breaking balls, off-speed pitches. So I'm going to focus on that and make sure without losing your strength. Yeah. I think that's a big part of it, too. But he's a young player. I think people lose track of that.
Yeah.
You know, Julio's young, and it happened for Julio much easier than it has for Jared. But he's a young player. He's got a ton of upside. I still have my eggs in the Jared Kelnick basket. I do believe in him. He's going to be a big part of our future. I'd love to see him come out and tear the cover off the ball in spring training and get off to a great start. But we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
He plays hard, man. I mean, that's the one thing. He's got a bro mentality, but he doesn't have a bro attitude. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he plays the game hard. He goes for the extra base. He runs. He plays defense. He does a lot of things very well. He just, unfortunately, has not been able to handle the off speed. And unfortunately as well, you don't get that training anywhere else. It's not going to come in spring training. It's not going to come in AAA. He's dominated those minor league paths, you know, so it's, yeah, I have nothing personal against him whatsoever. It's just from a professional development standpoint, can you take that step? And how many guys, Mike, there've been a long list of very, very talented first round picks and very, very talented players that physically have the tools, but they just from the neck up or hitting the off speed pitch. Yep. How many times have you heard that? And you're like, oh man, this guy can hit a fastball now. It's just that curveball. He just could not handle that off-speed stuff.
It didn't have the patience or didn't have the eye or whatever the case may be. I don't think anyone's suggesting, though, that that's the problem with Kelnick. I haven't heard that anyway. I mean, you hear Scott there say physical tools, all totally there. I think including the ability to hit off-speed pitches. The question is the mental part of it. And you're right. That is more about pressure and how he deals with the day-to-day prep. It's not about the way he plays baseball. You're right. He does find ways to contribute. And I think we saw some of that at the end of last year when he came up for the final few games, et cetera. He still wasn't hitting, right? I mean, he was hitting, 180 on the year. It's not like he was going to hit 300. But he found ways to influence games with his legs, with his glove, with his eye, et cetera. And he found ways to contribute, which is why he earned starting, roles even into the postseason. So I still have eggs in Jared Kelnick's basket, even if eggs are more expensive than they were a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and a couple things here. Number one, I feel like I owe an apology to the bro community. So I don't know why I just had to label the bros. So I apologize to the bro community. Smart. That's uncalled
for. You don't want them as enemies.
No, you really don't. No. So I hope you're, and I mean this sincerely. I'm sorry to the bro.
Okay.
Because the populace out there, because I know you're big.
Justin will accept your apology. Justin will bring your greetings to the pen the next time he's there.
Please
say he's sorry for you.
I'll approach anybody wearing some Pit Vipers and some sleeveless shirts. Like, hey, just want a quick heads up.
I appreciate that.
Brock says he's sorry.
I'm sorry.
Fellow guy in the pen.
I'm gonna stop labeling that. It's just not appropriate. Okay. I just don't need to do that. Secondly, you know what I think Jared Kelnick needs? I may be wrong on this, but I don't think I am. He needs those moments. There have been so many of these where, like, okay, runner third, you know, and he's drawn a walk at times and he's done a few things, but there have been at least a dozen that come to my mind over the couple years that he's been up. You're like, okay, this is the one right here. This is kind of the turn.
To get you over the hump.
Get over the hump, man. Just get it done. Just be the one to round the bases and they tear your jersey off, you know, just be the one. And I don't think that happens necessarily in spring, right? Spring training. I already know how these conversations are going to go in March. What do we really know? What do we gain from these numbers? He's in 460.
We've seen him tear the cover off the ball in spring training before.
Correct. In April and in May, and when there's a runner at third and less than two outs, and you have a chance to be the difference maker, and you can make that game-changing play, and you can have that hit, and you can have that moment. Mm. I think he needs a few of those because they've been hard to come by.
Well, I'll tell you what. I hope that we get to have that conversation of, remember when Jared Kelnick figured it out? Remember the decision he made, the move he made, the whatever he made, and from then on out, he became the Jared Kelnick he was supposed to be. I really hope we get to have that conversation because I think it'd be really, really fun if we do.
What's
the 425? What's the bro got in the 425?
Good point. With the shift over, they said Jared will be fine. How much do you think? Because I think DePoto has pointed to him and Cal Raleigh as a couple of guys that should benefit.
I don't know if it's enough to say he'll be fine just by that happening. Yeah. I think there's a lot more that needs to go into it. But if he sees some of those hits fall in, could it help with the confidence and help keep him more relaxed? Yeah. Yes. He just needs to get off to a good start. Just come out and like be hitting 280 in the first week of the season, and
I don't
does
know
that
if
give
I believe that he's like had good stints before and he gets
not
in
to
his
start
head again.
Not to start
right
because he's always looking up at that
playing
at
from
that
behind and trying too hard to catch up.
Can't help but look at that number and see 180 instead of 280. It's a big difference.
Can I play a little contrarian? And again, if I'm wrong on this, you can certainly correct me. But a little bit of the other side of it would say, and this is player perspective, okay? Like Gino right now, how do you show me respect? How do you show me that I'm your guy? You pay me. You give me my money, right? If you're a player wondering, like, where do I stand on this team? Well, you know, are they going to draft my position in the first round in April or the second round in April? If the eggs are in his basket, then why do you platoon him? Then why do you go into this season and all of a sudden
– what?
If you believe in him, and
you're doing that because you believe in him.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, platoon and play him every other game, and you take pressure off
every other game. It's going to be 4 out of 5. I mean, he's the lefty in a platoon, which means he's getting most of the starts in left field against all of the right-handers, and you're giving him his best opportunity to not have to face all the nasty lefties he's seen in the first couple of years of his career. Oh, Brock, I see that. Polar opposite. If they didn't believe in him, they would have gone out and signed a big-time left fielder. They would have gone out and traded for a left fielder to come in and play the position and said, hey, buddy, sorry.
If they were done with him, they're not done with him.
I see this as absolutely believing in him, which is...
Well, then if he can't do it in this year three in a platoon situation, then when is he going to do it? Like... Year 4, year 5, when he doesn't have to platoon, is he just going to be a platoon player because he can't hit left, you know, nasty lefties? Like, is that not right then in itself kind of an indictment or a little bit of a hole? Like, you know, and as a player, does he feel that? Like, hey, man, I want to play every day. He strikes me as the mindset that I need to play every day.
There's a player that I have in mind whenever we talk about Jared Kelnick. and what I think he could now become. Because you're right. I think the fact that he didn't do it right away shows that he's probably not going to be a superstar. Usually superstars come out and you know right away that they are going to be great, even if they don't have, you know, they don't reach their pinnacle in year one. You can tell, like Julio, that they are going to be great.
Like A-Rod, like Griffey, Tatis.
He's not going to be one of those guys, in all likelihood. I'm not going to sit here and argue with you and tell you that he is. But there, as I said, is a group of players, and there's one in my experience that comes to mind. First-round pick, okay. Number 7 overall. What was Kelnick? Wasn't he right around there? 7, 13, or 7 or something like that?
I mean, he's in the top 10.
All right, this is the 1993 baseball draft, so it's been a little bit longer. Mm. But the name that comes to my mind is Trot Nixon. Another left-handed hitter who was a first-round pick, number 7, was a big deal coming up in the Red Sox system. Yep. And I go back to his rookie year, which I think was 1996. They called him up. Maybe it was the next year. Maybe it was 97. In 96, he just had a cup of coffee. But in 1998, they call him back up for real. And they say, you are absolutely not going to hit against left-handers all year long. You're going to hit against righties, and that's it. And he had that experience. I mean, I'm looking, he started 2 games that year against left-handed starters. Like that was the way they did it. They just made sure that he was only going to be playing against righties. And Trot Nixon did not ever turn into the player that he was supposed to be. He didn't become a perennial all-star, superstar, etc. But he did become a really good player that contributed to a couple of excellent and one championship team.
Yep. See that
there's some relevance to that.
There is. There absolutely is. And again, I'm just putting in a little player mind. And by
the
way,
let me say I screwed that up even more. It was 99. So just to think about some of the comp. He comes up, plays in a couple games in 96. Doesn't come up in 97. Comes up and plays in 13 games in 1998. And I'm sure at that point, at the age of 24 in 1998, a year older than Kelnick is now, people are like, it's never going to work out. Well, in 1999, at the age of 25, Brock, he finally gets his opportunity with 447 at-bats, hits 270 when 830 OPS. It's a different era, so those numbers are not the same as they would be now, but he's 25, not 23.
So herein is some of the question and why this is a great conversation and one that feels like it could go on for hours and hours, and it probably will in a spring training and into the regular season. Because does Jared Kelnick view himself as Trot Nixon, or does Jared Kelnick view himself as Julio Rodriguez? Right. Is Jared Kelnick gotten to the point where like, OK, because players have to learn. Right. And the great players
do. There was a time in which Trot Nixon didn't view himself as that. He saw himself as, you know, Mickey Mantle or whatever the case may be.
Sure.
And eventually he's humbled a little bit, or, you know, however it worked. He was a grinder. He was a worker. And by the way, really, the stories of Trot Nixon are famous with his dad. I remember a story about how we've talked about this before. He would strike out and his dad would make him run home. He would hit 3 home runs in a game and strike out once, and his dad would be like, yeah, you're running home, shouldn't have struck out. Right? I mean, he had a Marv Marinovich kind of dad who pushed him and pushed him. And I remember Trot kind of opening up about this one Father's Day in a column or something like that, and talking about sort of the ups and downs of dealing with that and how it made him, but also how it maybe limited him at times, and just some of the challenges of dealing with that. I don't know. I think Kelnick may be very similar to a Trot Nixon type guy. And Trot didn't get it till 25. He ended up playing until he was 34 and had a fantastic baseball career.
We've heard so much about all the voices that have been in Kelnick, too. And last year we worked with Mark McGuire that he told us in spring training. It's like, I kind of want, and maybe you guys disagree with this and it's crazy and off base, but I'm thinking of players who have been told their whole lives and have only been good about how good they are, and he should be Julio, maybe, or Tatis or Trout. It's like, maybe the only voice you need in your head right now is your own. And like, just go put the work in and fail your way if you're going to fail your way instead of trying to be somebody else.
And he is a guy who puts the work in. So if he's able to do all that, I don't know. I'll be with Scott on this one. I'm going to keep some eggs in Jared Kelnick's basket, and hopefully it ends up paying off for the Mariners this year. Let's do some ranking.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwarmfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Every morning at 9:45 on Brock and Saul.
Yeah, top 10 list. I'm not buying that.
Ranked.
All right, funny guy. making fun of me all morning.
What?
You know what?
What?
Making fun of me all morning, calling me old. Because I went to go see an author speak about his book last night.
A progressive commercial last night.
Hi, my name is Dr. Rick.
With many other grandparents.
I went to go see Immortals last night at Town Hall Seattle, which was great. I
don't remember where it was.
It was at Town Hall Seattle.
Did you ask any questions?
No. Nobody in the audience. There were like hundreds of people there.
Oh, hundreds?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was sold out.
Wow.
It was sold out, and then there were actually hundreds of people watching online.
Wow.
Yeah. How many people do you think were there? Like 25 people?
When I think of like going to see an author speak, I think of going to a Barnes & Noble and there's seven people
there. You ever been to Town Hall Seattle?
No.
It's big. I don't know how many people that holds, but over 1,000. It was full.
I lived next door to it and I never went in there.
I mean, it was, there was no room. 100% full. People
should
have
seen the parking. Okay, so where should we park tonight?
I'm telling you, man.
We get out of the lot.
Well,
got to get out first.
The bus from the local Aegis, I think, took up sort of one spot, and then Shag had their bus. So,
anywho, we're ranking.
It was hard to maneuver around the walkers and the canes.
We are ranking.
And all of that. We're ranking books.
Books.
We're ranking books today, like, you know.
Book 'em, Dano.
There you go. That's from Hawaii 5-0, of course. Oh, yeah. I don't know this song, Harry Connick Jr.
If they asked me, I could write a book.
It's from When Harry Met Sally.
It is?
Yeah.
You know what putting a song that you've never heard in your ranking is?
Being thorough.
Clutter. I thought you didn't like clutter.
I don't like it in my house.
Take a look. And he told us what he saw, and it's easy to see. It's going by the book.
There's old Johnny Cash.
Okay, Johnny Cash is good.
Brock, I assume you'll talk about the good book.
Oh, yeah. Holy book. The book of books.
The book of books. It's true. And I know you like this person's life. I don't think it's a band. I would say this is a person. You know who that is?
Enya.
Yeah?
Nice.
I knew Brock would get Enya.
You knew he would get it?
Yeah, I knew he would struggle with the difference between Kiss and Barry Manilow years ago, but I also knew he would get Enya.
No, I had a little Justin.
Like tough time music, right?
Yeah, I had a little Enya time in my life.
Enya?
Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
I would have guessed that.
I mean, not with the band, just with the music.
Right.
The vibe.
I think it's just a person. Enya's just a person,
just a person.
Right? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mother, you can't judge a book by looking at the cover.
The great Bo Diddley right there.
Bo.
Fleetwood Mac did a Book of Love. Maybe not quite one of their classics. Iron Maiden did Book of Souls. All right.
I noticed we didn't get to announce today. Tom Brady retired, but so did Ozzy Osbourne.
I know. Sad.
I mean, that should have happened already. How old is he?
74. Had a longer career than Brady. Just saying.
I mean, he's
gone longer
like
than Brady.
He seemed like he was 74 like 20 years ago when he had an MTV show.
Yeah. He maybe, you know, lived two for one, as Brock likes to say.
So,
two for years. You got some people, Brock, Devontae Booker in the NFL, Devin Booker in the NBA, Cory Booker, the politician. Of course, you know, Booker T. Washington.
Oh, Booker
put him
T.
on there.
Mm-hmm.
Restaurants around here used to have the book bindery. Not around anymore. I'm certain there are some folks around who need to see their bookie before the Super Bowl next week.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe occasionally when you need to book a flight, you go to booking.com. Booking. Yeah.
Wow.
I never booked a flight there. I booked hotels there.
I feel like accidentally found myself there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mentioned Booker T. Washington, but also Booker T, the wrestler.
The Booker! Booker by Booker! Spinneroni!
That's ridiculous. And then some M&M.
I'm emptying my book of rhymes. Get them all off my pad. Every thought that I had.
There you go. It's the Book of Rhymes. Are you ready for the top five?
Yeah.
See, not that many honorable mentions.
No, there's not.
Kind of a, smaller group. Honorable mentions. But number five.
Ooh, we're out the book of love. Tell me, who wrote the book of love?
Right.
I've got to know the answer. Was it someone from the
book? That's the Book of Love by the Monotones.
Mm. 50s?
So many of these songs that I know all the words to and have no idea who they are.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happened or where it came from, but you somehow remember all the artist names.
I listened to a lot of oldies as a kid.
Impressive.
It's part of my life. Number four, I don't think we have any sound from it, but I will say The Book of Eli. Did you ever see that?
The Book of Eli.
Denzel.
Not. Yeah.
And Gary Oldman.
Yep. And
Mila Kunis. End Times?
Yeah, it's like a post-apocalyptic.
It's a post-apocalyptic. Yeah. 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 It's you know what? You might like it.
Really?
I think you might like some of the message of it, too. Seriously.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. It's pretty awesome. That's one of my favorite post-apocalyptic books, or movies, rather. That would be number four on this list. Speaking of movies, number three.
Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities.
Was I Bagheera the Panther in fifth grade?
Your worries and your strife.
Did I get to run down the middle of the aisle? I sure did.
Wow.
You're the Panther.
Was my neighbor the lead character? Yes, she was, Loretta, in the Jungle Book.
Wow.
Yep.
That brings back some memories for you.
Sure does.
Unexpectedly.
Meeker Elementary. Yeah. Could I sing then?
Shout out Ezra Meeker, founder of Puyallup.
Can I sing now? Nope.
No.
Was I tone deaf on my solo? Yep.
So
the last play I was ever in? You bet. Should I stop right now? Yes.
Probably. Yeah, confession, as you know. Bad for the reputation, good for the soul. Number two, books ranked. Now, this one's hard for me because we did Green yesterday and left this out. So I'm really upset about that. But Green was a broader, wider category, harder to get into the top five. Not as many books to be in the top five. True. So this is Green Onions from Booker T and the MGs.
Another one that just makes me think of The Sandlot.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's an all-time great instrumental.
So absolutely.
Good. Yeah.
But that and Wipeout.
Avery loves that song.
Good. It's a hit.
And that just leaves number one. Justin had never... What?
Oh, before we do, I think a good chance to tease the guy that's really written the book when it comes to scouting.
Yes.
7:30 tomorrow.
Mel Kiper Jr. going to be with us tomorrow.
Mel Kiper Jr.
Mel Kiper.
Jerry DePoto will be with us at 8:30 tomorrow. It's a big day already.
I think you answer the question, Jerk, tomorrow.
I think so. Yeah. Number one on our list. Justin had not heard this before or seen this, but from Seinfeld, one of the early episodes, I'm sure you remember Mr. Bookman.
Sure. We're too old to change the world. What about that kid sitting down, opening a book right now in a branch of the local library and finding drawings of peepees and wee-wees?
So funny. What about this funny boy? That guy kills it.
206, thanks, Salk. Books are cool. From the former program director of Town Hall.
Oh.
Long-time listener.
Awesome. Appreciate that. Awesome. Anyway, Town Hall Seattle is great, and that's all Seattle Arts and Lectures puts that on.
And no, The Notebook was not a top five.
No, The Notebook didn't make it.
Sorry.
Yeah, it didn't quite make it. What's Book
It
from Pizza Hut?
Thanks for letting me have a little fun with you,
by the way.
You
remember the Book It program from Pizza Hut?
No.
Ah, you would read books, you'd get points, you could cash them in for small personal pan pizzas.
Wow.
I was a strong reader, and then getting free pizza out of the deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good program.
It's still going.
Winner, winner, pizza dinner.
Yeah. The Book It program is alive and well.
All right. Well, I got to go take my dentures out, so I'll see you guys later. Tomorrow, as Brock said, Mel Kiper Jr. will be with us, and also Jerry DePoto. We'll do some Answer the Question Jerk at 9 o'clock.
Mm.
And shout out to my lovely wife, Heather, on her birthday today. I hope she's enjoying her day off, because she's one of those people that takes her birthday off.
Good.
Nice.
Happy birthday, Heather.
Happy birthday, Heather. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Till then, the hey.
Barnes.
See you, everybody.
This is the chopper!
The energy boost.